The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience, not valid with any other offer.
Hey, this is Father Voskin, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast about life and love, about spirituality, well, just about everything that's involved in the fabric of life. And we view that life through some ancient lenses, the lenses of Armenian Orthodoxy, but they've been polished up in a new manner. We call that Armadoxy. And we invite you to sit back right now and take a look with us. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the Initiates mission and is brought to you by Epostle.net. Apostolic evangelism for an expanding, and dare we say, electronic universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. Well, I gotta tell you, we have been ready. We are ready. In fact, we are taking some next steps towards Las Vegas, Nevada. We're gonna be there for the next few days. We're taking the whole show on the road. Epostle.net, In Issues Ministries. We're gonna be over there for the Blog World New Media Expo. I've been telling you about it for the last several months. Been wanting to get together as Epostle with so many people that have shared their interest, and we're going to be taking the show over there to Las Vegas, talking to people who are involved in new media, sharing what we do here in Glendale, learning from them what they do in different parts of the world, but all coming together around this theme of new media. And that's really exciting. That's really an opportunity. You know why it's really exciting? I got to tell you, we are found on the Armenian church calendar. This is wild. You know how these things really work out. In fact, in a few minutes, I'm going to talk to you about some major spiritual, what people would ordinarily call coincidence, but I don't believe in that. I believe that God is really moving us in some very, very unique and special spiritual directions. I mean, go ahead, open up a calendar of the Armenian Church. Today we find ourselves between two major feasts. One of them is the Feast of the Holy Translators last Saturday, and coming up on us is the Feast of the Holy Evangelists. Now you all know who the Holy Evangelists are, right? They are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the ones that put together the Gospels, the narratives, the story of Jesus Christ. And interestingly enough, the Armenian Church remembers them, but before them there is a feast called the Holy Translators. And in this group are a group of men who are not necessarily contemporaries. They are separated not only by distance of where they lived, where they did their ministry, but also they are separated by time. There are centuries between them. For instance, Saint Mesrob Mashtots, a figure of the 5th century, is one of the translators. Saint Nerses Shnorali Galayetsvoin is another translator, and he is of the 12th century. So now, these people that are all put together, let's see, who else is in there? There's Tavit Anach. This is wild too. This guy was a philosopher named David. And he was so intense that he could take on any of the Greek philosophers. And he is known also as a translator. And there's a group of these men put together, Yerishe, a writer, somebody who put together the history of the Armenian people. These people are put together under this title of translator for a very good reason. Because what did they do? Well, they translated. That's not exactly the whole thing. What is a translation? Translation is putting something in terms that everyone can understand. Basically, taking something complex and simplifying it, right? Simplifying it by means of language or whatever else we need. If you get a chance, I want you to check out the show notes for today. We're going to put in there a small little clip, a link to a clip by a young man named Dikran Khachigian. I saw him last Sunday in church. He was wearing a robe and he was serving at the altar, and this young man is deaf. I was so excited to see him serving at the altar. I ran into him during the last few years on several occasions. He's participated in some of the In His Shoes activities. Young man. I wouldn't say he's even 20 years old. Anyway, he has a YouTube video, and I want you to check it out. He is signing the Nicene Creed. Now here's a man, young man. He comes to America from Armenia, a young boy. He comes here and he serves his church. How? You say, how's that possible? He can't hear a thing. Oh no, he can hear. He can hear with his heart. And you can tell that as he's signing the Nicene Creed. And what's he doing? He's basically translating that creed for his friends, for others who may not be able to hear. But by observing the signing, they are receiving a translation. He has now simplified the faith for his friends. In fact, Sahag Barteb, who was the Catholicos of the Armenian people in the 5th century, wanted to do the same thing. He said, let's get somebody who can invent an alphabet so that we can translate the faith to the people. Basically simplify that faith, take that faith to the Armenian people. Mesrop Mashtots invents 36 letters that don't even that make sounds that don't even exist in other languages, but in the Armenian language they were very pure and very faithful to this, the sounds that were coming out of people. And Mesrop Mashtots invents this alphabet and he translates the Bible. He translates the Holy Scriptures. In fact, he refers to those scriptures as the breath of God. And that breath of God is now something that is distributed throughout the land by the Holy Church. And so Armenians have now the tool to not only become, but to remain Christian, to be faithful to the traditions of their forefathers, to be faithful to the holy gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. This is the work of the translators. Nerses Shnor Ali in the 12th century did the same thing. He translated, he simplified the faith so that people can understand it. And once you understand it, what can you do? You have no choice. The person who understands the Christian faith has no choice. He has to react to it. Because it's simple, it's logical. To every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. The action is that God has acted within you, has spoken to you. Now you have to react to it in an equal and opposite force. You need to react by taking those commandments to love one another, to help one another, to secure one another in that love. To preach the gospel, not with your mouth, but with your actions and with your deeds. To love and share and to care for one another. That's it. And so basically, generations were called to love and given an opportunity to express their faith thanks to the work of the Holy Translators. And here we come to the year 2010. And there is a new media expo. There is Apostle.net, apostolic evangelism from the time of the apostles, but for an electronic world. What is that? Big deal? Certainly not. It's the same thing that the apostles did. It's the same thing that the translators did, using the resources that were given to them. And so today we have electronics. Today we have computers. Today we have the internet. And hey, that's what we're doing. We're using the new media to take something complex that may not be understandable because of many factors, not only language, but translating it, simplifying it for people to accept and thereby being able to react to that message. To be able to say, yes, I will be an ambassador of Christ's love. Last night, if you didn't get a chance to see it, I really challenge you to go and see last night's Questions in Faith. It was wild. It was wild. We had a group from the Assyrian Orthodox Church. They were filming us. And now that's going to be spread out through media, again, through electronics. That's going to be spread out through the web, as well as through television sources, stations. We had our Apostle.net camera. We were talking to a group in Glendale, being observed from people throughout the world, and the media file stays there on the internet so that today, tomorrow, the next day, people can download and can view the archives. Taking something that is complex and simplifying it. It's the work of the Holy Translators. And it's not because we're doing this. It's what is demanded of us by our faith. When we celebrate the Feast of the Holy Translators, it's not just to sit back and applaud the work of Mesrop Mashrots or Nerses Shnorali. It's to say, hey, these guys did it. They are giving us an example. The saints give us an example of how to live. And if St. Mesrop Mashrots did it, if St. Nerses Shnorali did it as human beings, why aren't we doing it? We need to do it. We need to take the faith and get it out there. And this is the work of the evangelist, right? Getting the good news out. So I think it's beautiful that we're going to New Media Expo. In between these two feasts, the Feast of the Holy Translators and the Feast of the Holy Evangelists. And we're going to be there. We're going to be talking with other people, seeing what means we have, what means there are to get this word out, to do the work of God. And each of you that participates, either by downloading this file, by even more important, here it is, taking this file and sharing it with your friends and saying, here's something of value. We need to get the word out. And for each of you that contribute, that donate their time, their effort, and their money to this project, this is your feast. This is your feast. You are a holy translator. You are taking something complex and you are making it very, very easy and accessible. We have gone for a while, and we start off every show with a song of the day. I wanted to take a little bit of time of saying why we're going out to New Media, just not because I'm very sensitive to that. I think that people trust us, and that trust is very important, and I never want to take that for granted. When they make a donation, it's not just so we get out there and we have a good time. It's so that we do the work that is demanded of us. And I want you to know that you're partners in that work. Now, today's song is by Joni Mitchell. It's called Magdalena Londres. Not an easy song, but neither is the topic we're going to be talking about right after we get back. I'm going to tell you what's going on in the world and tell you what we're doing about it at In Issues Ministry. Here's Joni Mitchell, Magdalena Londres.
I was an unmarried girl. I just turned 27. Sent me to the sisters for the way men looked at me. Branded as a Jezebel, I knew I was not bound for heaven. I'd be cast in shame into the Magdalene Londres. Most girls come here pregnant, some by their own fathers. Bridget got that belly by her parish priest. We're trying to get things white as snow. All of us will be cotton daughters in the steaming stains of the Magdalene Londres. Prostitutes and destitutes and temptresses like me, fallen women sitting still. charity, but charity. These bloodless brides of Jesus, if they just once glimpse their roof, can they know? And then drop the stones concealed behind their rosaries. They wilt the grass they walk upon. They leech the light out of a room. They like to drive us down the drain at the Magdalene laundries. Peg O'Connell died today. She was a cheeky girl, a flirt. They just stuffed her in a hole. Surely to God you'd think at least some bell should ring. One day I'm gonna die here too, and they'll plant me in the dirt. Some lame bulb that never blooms, come any spring, not any spring.
Joni Mitchell, telling us a story like no one else can. Magdalena Laundries. It is a tough song. It's a tough topic. But I wanted to play this song as an introduction to something that has been speaking to my heart for many years right now. Since I have been in the Glendale area, and I've shared with you briefly some of the issues, but today I wanted to really focus in on it because I believe that this is the time. I believe something's going to happen right now that we together collectively can do something about. And you're going to have to bear with me. I'm going to give you some details about some of the what leads up to it, because I've tried the traditional methods. Believe it or not, I've tried the traditional methods of finding help. And there is so much politics, and there is no spirituality. And women who are involved in sexual abuse, women who are involved in domestic violence, yes, they need protection. They need to be protected from their environment, from the people that are causing them the pain. Physical protection is very important, but at the same time, spiritual understanding and spiritual care is equally as important so that that person becomes whole again. And I hope you'll understand that as I peel away some of the layers of what's been going on here in Glendale. Something that nobody wants to talk about. Sometimes it gets relegated to the ostrich mentality. So, sort of like if you stick your head in the sand, it might go away, or we could pretend that it doesn't exist, or at least we don't have to deal with it, right? Wouldn't that be nice if that really worked? Stick your head in the sand and it all goes away. But you know it doesn't. People are getting hurt, and children are getting hurt. And it's all around us. The latest casualty we discovered this week. Let me read to you a small little paragraph from the internet press release. On September 30th, 2010, a 20-year-old mother of one was taken to a hospital for cranial brain hemorrhaging, a broken finger, and bruises in different parts of her body. After saying her injuries were from a fall, Zarui died in Erepuni Hospital. Zarui's sister says the young mother was subjected to continuous domestic abuse since her marriage in 2008. Law enforcement allegedly knew of the abuse, According to media reports, Armenian police have arrested Zardawi's husband, Yanis Sergisov. But according to Zardawi's sister, Yanis Sergisov's mother has also continuously beaten Zardawi. This is a small little story that comes out of a small little country called Armenia. And unfortunately, this is all around us. I'll never forget a few years ago. This is just right in my head. You can't believe how much I think about this one issue, where one of our parishioners called me in the middle of the night because she was the victim of domestic abuse. And when I got there, the husband had been taken away by the police, and she started to tell me about the horror that she had been through. And at the very end, she said, "Would you pray for me?" And of course, when I say the end of our conversation and the end of us speaking that evening, and she was going to be taken to the shelter, she said, "Would you pray for me?" And I'll never forget this, because I took her hands to pray and she screamed. And I looked over at her hands, and her fingers were broken. Her fingers were broken. And she sat there telling me her story without revealing that pain. And so many of these children, 20-year-old you just heard, died in Nedapuni Hospital. These are children. And unfortunately, these children do not know how to deal with this kind of pain. They do not understand what they're supposed to do. In fact, some of them even believe that this is their lot in life. Some of them even believe that this is normal. It's part of a normal relationship, because they've been fed this lie that somehow, and religion, of course, it's in there. Religion has fed the lie too. It's given them statements such as the husband is the head of the woman. Women, subject yourselves to your husband. And so if I'm going to subject myself, go ahead, do whatever you want. You see what the problem is over here? It's not these children. It's not these women. It's the lies that they've been fed. And religion should share in the blaming process. They keep giving these kind of lies rather than talk about the love that God has in their hearts. They keep talking about how men are superior to women, how men control the women, and of course, who's writing the story? Have you ever thought about that? Who writes the story in religion? It's the men. Women, subject yourselves to your husbands. Who said that? Well, it's in the Bible. Yeah, open your eyes. What does it say in the next sentence? It says, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church." How did Christ love the church? He died for it. He sacrificed for it. He gave his all for it. What husband is doing that? You show me a husband that is willing to die to give everything for his wife, I will then turn to the wife and say, "Yes, subject yourself to someone as loving and as caring and as compassionate as this person." But you take that one line, "Subject yourselves to your husbands." Okay, he's got a whip today. He's got a gun tomorrow. And unfortunately, we're being brought up in this kind of nonsensical environment. Nonsensical religion. Exactly that word is exactly the word we use. Nonsensical. Goes against common sense. God gave us a brain. God gave us reason. He gave us the ability to communicate with one another, to share with one another. There is no lot in life where you're supposed to just throw yourself down as a wet towel and let everybody walk all over you and use you and blow their nose in you. That's not the kind of life God calls you to. I remember a few months back I talked about that Noah's Ark story. And how many people wrote to me? How many people complained? How dare I talk against Noah's Ark? Noah's Ark is a myth, folks. It's a myth. It teaches us something about the relationship between God and men. But to take it literally, that's the problem. That's what people are doing. God is upset with the world, so he decides, let's flood it all. Everybody's a sinner. You mean the little kid that was born yesterday? You mean the kid that was born 2 days ago? Who hasn't even had any thoughts? He's a sinner, so let's wipe them out. Last Sunday, I was at the cathedral, and I was sitting watching the Divine Liturgy. When it came time for Holy Communion, they had this custom, which I thank God that we got rid of at our church. They tried to pull that on me when I came to Glendale. And I said, no, you're not doing that in our church. When women come up to communion, they are free to cover their heads or not. And some of the more zealous men will stand up and pass out these little doilies. They're exactly doilies. They're the kind of little things that you put on your chairs and on your tables. And they throw these doilies on these women's heads. And I said, no way, stop it. If a woman wants to, she's welcome to put a scarf on her head. But first of all, it's completely up to her. And second of all, communion is such a holy moment. Don't distort it with these nonsensical things that you bring in from the old country. And so I saw it last week. I was at the cathedral where, of course, you know, they're starting to do this now. And women were coming up, and just the commotion. You couldn't even think about communion because all you see are these little doilies flying around. Going on one woman's head, you wonder if they've got lice, and going on the next head, and you wonder about that itch that they have on their head, back and forth and back and forth. And finally, this little girl walks up to receive Holy Communion. She's 3 years old, and somebody threw a little doily on her head. And I thought to myself, and in fact, I couldn't contain it. I turned to the priest that was next to me, and I said, which is the bigger sin? The girl going up and receiving communion without a head covering, or us throwing those things on her head and making her bend to our traditions? Jesus said, let the children come to me, for to them belong the kingdom of heaven. Who the hell am I to tell her what the kingdom of heaven should be and you need a doily on your head? I'm all for tradition. I'm all for customs. They give you a sense of order. But let people understand. Let people come to a rational understanding and make those decisions themselves. That's the freedom that trumps all of these orders and all of these traditions. That freedom is something given to us by God and is something that nobody has a right to take away from us. We just read this story of Zarui. A young girl who was beaten because she believed that was her lot in life. She died. And today there is a movement. And we're going to put the link on our website. I want all of our listeners to sign the petition asking Armenia to pass domestic violence legislation. This is very, very important that we get this passed in Armenia. Now, you say, well, that's happening here in America too. Yes, it is. It's happening in Japan. It's happening in France. It's happening in Spain, in England, and on and on and on and on. Domestic violence is all over. We just happen to notice it right now in Armenia. But when we come back, I'm going to let Ani come in and I'm going to take a little breather because it is an emotional topic for me. And I'll share with you a little bit more when we come back after Ani, because I do want to tell you what our plans are. And I do need your help. I need your prayers and your help in making this work. We are going to do something that will shake the world. But it's something that, well, you won't understand unless you put your feet in her shoes. For right now, here's Ani.
Today's spiritual bubble is called Love in Action, an excerpt from Mother Teresa. One night, a man came to our house and told me, there is a family with 8 children. They have not eaten for days. I took some food and I went. When I finally came to the family, I saw the faces of those little children disfigured by hunger. There was no sorrow or sadness in their faces, just the deep pain of hunger. I gave the rice to the mother. She divided it in two and went out, carrying half of the rice with her. When she came back, I asked her, "Where did you go?" And she gave me this simple answer, "To my neighbors. They are hungry also." I was not surprised that she gave, because poor people are generous, but I was surprised that she knew that they were hungry. As a rule, when we are suffering, we are so focused on ourselves, we usually have no time for others. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Well, thank you, Ani. We're going to miss you tomorrow. We'll miss you at New Media Expo. Wouldn't that have been great, huh? Having the bubble there. Having the bubble at New Media. I mean, isn't that the ultimate New Media? The bubble. We're going to miss you, Ani, but there's always next year. Maybe you'll be a little bit more relaxed with school, and school will be over, actually, and you'll have some time to join us over there. But we'll be thinking about you, as we always do, and we thank you for this nice bubble today. It's very appropriate, isn't it? And did you like that? I love the way Ani always somehow figures out how to make an appropriate bubble for us. It's like sometimes when you get so consumed with your own pain and your own suffering, you don't see the suffering of others. And really, we're called to be awake all the time, aren't we? That's what the psalmist says. That's what our Lord Jesus Christ directs us to always be ready. Always be ready for what? Well, to be able to accept that love and to be able to share that love. Remember the story of the 10 maidens, who, the five of whom foolishly were asleep. They weren't ready. But the five who were awake were able to offer that light, were able to offer to others, be of service to others, were able to be part of the love gathering. So let's use this. Let's use this. Let's bounce off of this bubble, so to speak. And let's talk about where we are. Yes, we do have pains. We do have sufferings. But when you hear about stories such as Zardawi, when you hear this immense pain, you can do nothing but stop for a moment and say, how can I help? What is my responsibility in this equation? And you're called to that responsibility. You can't escape it. Once you hear it, you're called to it. Because the consequences are too great. The consequences are too great. Remember Martin Luther King, what he said during the civil rights movement. He said, history will have to record that the greatest tragedy, he was talking, of course, of that period, was not the strident clamor of bad people, but the appalling silence of the good people. And think about that for a moment. It's the silence of good people that's worse than all the bad that people are doing. There was another saying he had, he who passively accepts evil is as much involved in it as he who helps to perpetrate it. He who accepts evil without protesting against it is really cooperating with it. I can't cooperate with this kind of violence. I need to protest it. I need to do something about it. And sure, we've given you means. There's a website. Sign the petition. You'd be surprised. Those petitions go a long way, and it's very important to voice your opinion, to get out there and say that this is wrong and we need to do something about it to stop it. And of course, we're talking about Armenia, and this problem is all over. It's epidemic proportions throughout the world. Women are being abused in all societies, in all nations. Today we find out it's in Armenia. Today we talk about Armenia because, well, ethnically, I am close to that. I know many of our listeners are not even Armenian, but and I'm focusing in on this one little area. But I know you know about events that are taking place in your area. I know that there are ways to protest in every area about the violence towards women. But beyond the protest, I want to talk about what we can do to help with some of the pain. And I'm going to say this in all sincerity, because I think so many times when we protest or we report about these things, that's good, and then it takes a back burner. In fact, it's one of the big problems with information coming to us in this day and age. We talked earlier about the new media. Definitely, it's a problem of the new technology. We get bombarded with all kinds of information daily. And which one are you going to address? There's a genocide taking place in Darfur. George Clooney talks about it, and so all of a sudden, our attention is focused over there. There is a young girl who dies in our backyard, and she has been domestically abused, sexually abused. So our attention all of a sudden shifts over there. The next day we hear about miners that are trapped in a mine for 33 miners for 60 days, 70 days, and our attention is over there. Which one can you get to? Which one can you help? Where can you help? So it's very important to, first of all, take a breath, thank God that you are in a position to be able to help, and then focus in on what is important. And I want to share with you what is important in my life. In Glendale, having seen this kind of abuse, having seen women being trampled on, it was a few years ago that I said that we need to start a center where women can find some safety. Do you remember a few months ago I did a podcast from the desert? I never told you the whole story on that. Today, well, if you're listening, you get the whole story. The reason I was out in the desert, I went to visit a place called St. Jude. And St. Jude was exactly this. It was a home for victims of domestic violence. And I thought to myself, are we ready? Are we mature enough to start a place like this where women can find safety? Women and their children can find safety from the men that abuse them, can go through their pregnancies, can put their children up for adoption rather than abort those fetuses. Can they find a way of continuing life, receiving the education, being empowered, so that they will not make the same mistakes, whether it's picking the right guy to marry with, to settle down with, whether it's planning a pregnancy, whatever the case may be. Can we find the right means? Can we find an environment that will be safe, that will be nurturing, caring, and on top of it, provide an education? And this last several years, I've looked at many, many different models. In fact, I've appealed to many people, except to the right people, because obviously we don't have this center right now. But I realized a couple of weeks ago that I was going about it the wrong way. I'm not talking to people of faith. Instead, I'm talking to people who have money. Instead, I'm talking to people, well, who are in the church. People with money, you know, they steer me right. They say, hey, I know a good real estate agent. I know somebody who could take some money and invest it for you. We could maybe find you some loans that are at a lower rate since you're a priest and we like you. People in the church say, well, let's put together a committee. You know, there's women that are beaten. There are women over there that are suffering. There's abortion. Let's organize a committee. Let's sit around a table and discuss it. Meanwhile, more women are getting beaten. Meanwhile, I'm holding the hands of women and praying and notice that their fingers are bloody, are broken, and the problem is not being solved. And I didn't come to this realization until last week. Something happened. There was a young girl going through her first pregnancy. At week 37, she goes into a coma. And she's taken to the hospital, and they take the child out of her through C-section. The child is transported to Children's Hospital. The young girl is in a coma at her own hospital, separated by her child. Now you got to picture this. You go into the hospital environment. There's the father. You don't know. Do you congratulate him? He just had a kid. It's his first kid. How could you congratulate somebody like that? The kid's in intensive care. The wife's ready to die. And she's on life support. And we prayed. We prayed with the family. And it was on the 9th day that I went and visited her the second time. I saw her in the hospital again, just hooked up to all these machines, life support. And we said a prayer, and I looked at her and I says, "You're going to make it. You need to fight this." Even though I didn't think she could hear, I told her, "Give me a small little sign. Let me know you can hear." And she moved so slightly. In fact, it was so slight that maybe others might not have noticed it, but I did notice a small little twitch under her chin, letting me know that she heard. But what got me was another woman of faith that was standing next to me, and as I was praying, she said, "Of course she's going to get better." And she said it with so much confidence. And I said, "How do you know?" She says, "Because God doesn't joke around." "What is this, a joke? You mean God would let her live after all that she went through if he was going to take her life away?" And whatever the theology is of that kind of statement is secondary to the faith and commitment with which that statement was made. Do you know what I'm saying here? She said it with so much certainty that I knew that that woman would get up. And the next morning was a Sunday morning. I came into church and I stopped the divine liturgy just before we sang "Lord Have Mercy, Der Vormir." And I asked the entire congregation, I told the whole congregation, that here is a mother that is in the hospital, 9 days into a coma, separated from her child. The child was off of life support the night before, but I needed everyone to pray for this woman. Because I know that the policies of hospitals are different, but 10 days is about it. They don't like keeping people on life support past 10 days. And we prayed. And I did something very different that night. I wanted to call the family, find out how she's doing, and I didn't. I held back. I said, "I'm not going to show any doubt. I know that this woman is okay." We prayed as a community. We prayed with her name. And 2 days later, it was on the 13th day that she was in a coma, she came out of it. And they called me. And they let me know that she was alive. She was well. And that's the power of prayer. That's the power that God gives us. That's the power that he says will move mountains. Now, are you ready to move something? We need to move these young ladies that are in our community, that are suffering from domestic violence, that are suffering from sexual abuse. We need to get them into centers. And these centers are not going to be built by the money of the rich. It's going to be built by faith. We need to be committed to that and believe in that. As Jesus said, if you have faith the size of this small mustard seed, you can move mountains. Are you ready to do it? I think I'm ready. In fact, I know I'm ready. Because after that incident, I tell you, I don't want to go back to the same sources. I'm tired of talking to rich people. I'm tired of talking to people who have no faith. I want to talk to people that have faith. People that have faith and say that I want to make a difference in the world because of that faith. You keep going to the same people and they keep putting you in line with. I went to the senator, the good senator in our area. She was wonderful. I have to tell you, she actually took me to a woman's shelter so that I could see how it works. I looked at that woman's shelter. In fact, it was so wild because, you know, they didn't even disclose the location of the shelter. We had to go under secrecy. We had to sign a statement that we wouldn't disclose where it was. We had to go and meet at an intersection and then be transported to that area. There's so much secrecy involved because, of course, you don't want the husband. You don't want the violence to follow the victim. And I went and saw how these women live. I saw the shelters firsthand. And the senator put me in touch with grants from the government. And the government will give you money. But you know what? The government doesn't have that compassion. And the long list of ifs if you do that, preclude you from, first of all, starting on time, and secondly, putting in the spirit. Being a place where spirituality is a priority. And I choose my words very carefully. It's a priority, not the priority. Because ultimately, when you see women who are abused, the ultimate priority is their safety, is a safe environment for them. Now, I've put together this plan for a woman's shelter. It is to meet the needs of women who are abused. And specifically, we're talking about Armenian women in the Los Angeles area, because this is a small population that, first of all, goes unnoticed. Second of all, has incredible social pressures to keep it covered because of the shame factor. And probably most importantly, thirdly, this is a group that is spiritually living in poverty. There is a spiritual poverty because they don't understand that this is not normal. Here's a group of people that needs to be educated so that they don't make those same mistakes. So we have put together this program where women can find safety, can find education, can find a means of safely going through a pregnancy, putting their children up for adoption, getting on with their life. And as Jesus said to all the sinners that he always came across, go and sin no more. In other words, don't repeat this. Don't be involved in the vicious circle that keeps coming back, if not to you, then to your children. And this is a plan that we have. And I'm looking for people who want to pray with me. I'm looking for people who want to fund this kind of activity, this kind of center. I'm not looking for somebody to come and tell me where we should build it. I'm not looking for somebody to tell me which psychologists we need to get involved in this. I'm talking for somebody who says that we believe in the vision. Here it is. Do you want to see it on paper? Drop me a line. Drop me a line and I'll be happy to send it to you. I'll be happy to send you the entire program with the condition that you commit to it, that you say that this is now my ministry too. I'm looking for some people who have the faith. First of all, who have a faith in Jesus Christ, who believe that Christ came here as a liberator, who came to this world to preach love, and that love is more powerful than all the evil. This is our first commitment. You got to believe in that. If you believe in that, then you take the next step. We believe that the church is the body of Christ. That what would Jesus do? Well, Jesus would help these people. And how would he do that? He'd actually walk there. He'd extend his hands, his legs, his mouth is us, the Holy Church. You got to believe in that. Third, we need people that are going to be committed, just as they do everything else. They're going to say that this is a commitment that I'm making, and I need to start bringing together some funds to make this happen. Now, this is something that's in my heart, and I'm not putting any pressure on anybody. I want you to listen to this show. Next week we will come back and we will have other topics. We're going to talk to you about new media, but this is a project that will not go away from me. It's been in my heart. God has put it in my heart several years ago. I've tried many means. I have just confessed to you, my listeners, probably some of the closest people to me. I have confessed to you that I've gone about it the wrong way. Because I've looked for committees, I've looked for government, I've looked for even church leadership. And all they said is, the women are beaten, let's form a committee, let's form an organization. It's finished. There is no organization beyond the church, beyond the body of Jesus Christ, which is all healing, all consuming, and able to do this work. So are you with me? Drop me a line. Okay, you can drop it at feedback@epostle.net. I'd love to hear from you. Love to hear some of your comments too. And together, hopefully we could tackle this very, very, very big, alarming, difficult, and tragic reality.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the third year of production and growing daily with new listeners around the globe. This new message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. Epostle.net is the voice of Armadoxy, committed to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we need to avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at the inhisshoes.org website. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, we got through some big topics today, didn't we? Some very important ones, and ones that really speak to not only me, I know many of you, because of your writings, because of things that you've shared with me, things that are very important to you as well. So please check out the show notes today. There's going to be all kinds of links on there where you could connect with the story that I told you. You could sign the petition, but also make your voice heard with us. Let us know what's going on in your life. Tell us how you can help, how you can get involved in this very dynamic ministry. We are going out to Las Vegas. We are heading out to Las Vegas tomorrow morning, bright and early, and we're going to be there for the New Media Expo. And it is all about the means by which this message can get out. It's ways of plugging in to what's happening. Basically, the electronic universe we always talk about, we want to be able to do apostolic evangelism in that expanding and electronic universe. There's one way. We call it epostle.net. Won't you join us at our website as well? Epostle.net, you'll find this podcast as well as every other podcast we've done from the beginning of time. You'll find our regular webcasts, which include Wednesday night Bible studies, Monday morning Bible studies in Armenian language on Monday mornings. You won't want to miss that one as well. So all these wonderful things happen thanks to your generosity. Please be generous continually in this dynamic and forward-moving ministry. For the wonderful people who put this together and the wonderful people who are now getting ready to take off. Yes, we are heading out to Blog World. Oh, I'm excited about it. And I can't wait to tell you about it. Actually, oh, I forgot to tell you. Wait, whoa. Hold everything. Thank you. I forgot to tell you, we're going to be broadcasting from Blog World. We're going to be broadcasting. We will be able to get some small little snippets here and there, and we'll try to broadcast so that we'll put together a special edition of The Next Step, hopefully at the end of this weekend. So you want to check that out as well. It all happens at epostle.net. Okay, we can continue now. Okay, for the wonderful people who put this podcast together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, who promises to be in one of the other cars, not in mine, for Ani with her bubbles. Oh, we're going to miss you so much, Ani. This is Father Vazgen inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
No brag, just fact.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.